Talks with Aaron, Holly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Guys, we're finally getting going after Paul has had us sitting here for no fewer than 31 minutes. 31 minutes. I don't wait 31 minutes for anybody, Paul. I wait 5 minutes for a professor. I wait 10 minutes for a doctor. I don't wait 31 minutes for effing Paula Ponte. I'm just saying.
Well, Aaron, I'm like an AMC Theaters movie. You got to wait 30 minutes before the movie starts.
And Aaron, we know that isn't true. You don't wait for other things, but you would wait eternity for Paul.
That's true. This is true. I did, in fact, wait 31 minutes for Paul. I complain about it, but he is my precious.
Yes. Well, you know, we had a little bit of some house stuff going on this morning. So apologize for my tardiness. Not that anyone listening to this knows, but maybe you're upset too. But we'll make up for it with good content today. Good conversation, maybe.
We're just going to make up for it. Don't hold me to that. We're just going to make up for it with content.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Don't oversell this.
That's right.
Yeah. Aaron, you know, speaking of good content, or I don't know, maybe Dutton Ranch. You know, we talked about the first episode when it came out. I felt like it was a little bit, it felt like it was just not, it didn't grab me as much in the first episode as I think it grabbed you. But now we're four episodes in. I feel like the show has finally revealed where the hell it's going. Episode four was brutal.
And I should probably clarify, I haven't actually finished episode four. So no spoilers.
Did you have to stop? Did you stop
I stopped anything? To come in here and record this with you, but I could have finished it now that I know that we were going to start 31 minutes late, Paul.
Sorry about that. Oh, okay. So where are you in episode four? So I know what I can discuss.
Beth has directed Carter to take Aurelia out for dinner.
Oh, because the writing is on the wall with the hand and mouth disease with the cows, right?
Yeah, the hoof and foot, yeah.
Hoof and foot, yeah, whatever it's called. whatever. No spoilers. I will say this is an episode in which Jen had to leave the room for a significant time.
Oh, yeah. I can see where that's going, yes.
Yeah.
I really like Dutton Ranch. You know this is important to me. All the hats are correct. They are Texas cut cowboy hats. They are appropriately shaped. I'm just like, thank you. Thank you. Well, you someone's know, paying attention.
Taylor Sheridan lives in Texas. He did not live in Montana. So, you know, I'm assuming he knows the Texas rules a little bit more than the Montana rules, maybe.
I understand he's not doing hardly anything on this show.
Yeah, I think it's because he's got a little bit of a thing with
Cole Hauser. He and Cole Hauser are beefing still. So
yeah,
he is staying off the set, and so the showrunner is the guy doing everything. Yeah. So
and doing a bang up job, I will say.
Oh my god, it's so good. The writing on it is so good. It really does harken back to the first two seasons of Yellowstone.
It does. It does. You know, I think. Like I said, the first episode for me felt a little cold, and I think it was, it took a few episodes for me to understand where the hell this was going. Because unfortunately, mm-hmm. Taylor Sheridan in recent years has really kind of struck me with his, and again, he's just producing this, but his shows have kind of struck me a little bit navel-gazy. Even Tulsa King, you know, like it's eight episodes to tell basically a movie length story. There's a lot of like nothing. Yeah. There's a lot like episode, like the first episode of Dutton Ranch. I feel like other than the first 10 minutes, nothing really happened in the first episode of Dutton Ranch. But which each progressive episode, now I know where it's going.
Yeah. And I didn't feel like the fire and Dylan was really necessary to set up Dutton Ranch. I think you could have just started off. Here we are at Dutton Ranch in Texas. I mean, I feel like you didn't have to have this, you know, expository cold opening. I think you could have just opened up in Texas.
I think you could have. And I think that could have been a reveal that happened later in the season.
Yeah.
Because I think as an initial start, it kind of maybe started off a little bit on the wrong foot, right? Like, because the same thing happened with Marshall's. And that it's like, okay, literally everyone had so much tragedy over the last 18 months or six months, whatever time period it was, that it's like, it felt a little ridiculous for all of it to happen simultaneously.
Correct. Yeah, correct. But yeah, I think Dutton Ranch is far and away the best thing that's come out of Yellowstone since, 1923. I love 1923. And I think this is kind of a return to form for their storytelling. Beth and Rip have just such great chemistry. It is so strange to see how big Carter is now. he's 19 years old.
I thought he was 17. Apparently he's 19. So that helps a little bit with the storyline with Aurelia or whatever her name is.
Yeah.
Because at first I was like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah.
Isn't he only 17? No.
Right.
I guess he's 19, which, is at least legal. Yeah. It's interesting what's going on in his little world.
Well, and it seems really clear that they're setting up a Romeo and Juliet sort of thing there, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With the two opposing houses, I think it's very much going to be that type of thing. I am enjoying all of the casting in the show. And Paul, did you see Teeter's coming back?
I did not.
Teeter is going to be in the bunkhouse on Dutton Ranch.
I did not see that.
I saw that this week that they announced the casting, and I'm like, yes. So super excited about
that. That is super exciting.
I mean, I would watch the Teeter show.
I felt like they needed a little bit more.
Well, I feel like they're building the bunkhouse, right? You know, they hired on Zach. I don't think Azul is going to live on the ranch, but you've got Zach, and I think they'll just start adding people from time to time. And hopefully they don't do the thing that Yellowstone did and add a bunch of people and then not give them a story, right?
I
want to see Teeter being Teeter. I don't want to see Teeter wallowing in her grief. She should have been able to address that by the time she comes to Dutton Ranch.
Agreed.
I'm excited. I think, they should be looking at, the characters that make sense to pull over. I would just love to see, Teeter in this show.
Yeah, I think she'll be a nice breath of fresh air.
Agreed.
Because right now it's so deadly serious.
Yeah, and she is just so hysterical. Mm-hmm. She cracks me the F up. I cannot wait. Cannot wait. So,
yeah.
And
what's next?
I was very interested in this fourth episode where, something that we're currently experiencing here in Texas is screwworm, right? In the beef population. It's come over from Mexico and it will take out a herd. It will just destroy a herd. And they mentioned it on this episode. And I was like, I really appreciate that they are well-versed on the cattle industry since they're writing a show about cattle. I also very much appreciated the name dropping earlier in the episode where Beth is in Dallas trying to sell their beef to a high-end, premium steak restaurant. And she's like, look, you got 2 minutes before I pick up and take this over to Nick and Sam's. And Paul, I believe you have also eaten at Nick and Sam's before. It is just the best steakhouse in the world. Am I wrong about that? Didn't they take you to Nick and Sam's one time when you were here in Dallas? I think you were here for work.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Looking at it.
Yeah. I remember Nick and Sam's is off the hook. It is so good. And so I really appreciated the name drop. It does. Dutton Ranch does suffer from the same problem that Landman suffers from. The characters travel across the state at the speed of story. There doesn't seem to be an acknowledgement that where the Dutton Ranch is down on the border will take you about 7 to 6 hours to get from there to North Texas.
Yeah.
Beth seems to get there in record time. I don't know if she's got warp speed in that truck of hers. if she's got
well,
some
she does
sort
drive fast.
Of if she's got some sort of, hyperspace or whatever, if she folds time, in order to get there, but, wow, you know, you cannot get, she is leaving Dallas and it's probably 9 o'clock at night. Yeah, I'm on my way home. We'll get here as quick as you can. And then like the next scene, she's there and literally no time has passed. Okay. Yeah. That's not pop.
It's anyway, like 24. Love the show. It's like an episode of 24.
That's right.
Like you said, they travel at the speed of story. That was a good description.
Yeah. But good show. Highly recommend.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm enjoying Dutton Ranch. I picked up a few comics this week. There's a few we're going to talk about. It sounds like we have some interesting thoughts about what we read this week. I think we're going to have some real, like, all over the place thoughts on some of the comics we read this week. But the first one I really want to hear about is, Wayne, you picked up Dead Man. And, you know, Dead Man is a character. It's a new, you know, brand new volume of Dead Man as part of this DC All-In initiative. And, you know, I've always enjoyed the character of Dead Man, but I looked at a couple of preview pages and I was like, it looks a little bit extra wordy to me. And so I was like, I'm going to pass on this one. I don't know that I'm in the mood for this right now, but I want to hear your thoughts on Dead Man.
Yeah, it definitely is not a fast read because there is so much text between dialogue and text boxes, and there is so much talking. It is definitely meant to introduce people to the character that don't know the character. You have a whole 75% or more of the book just going through a day in the life of him and the types of things he does, which, I'm going to be honest, while there was some interesting things to it, most of that is pretty boring. You know, just going around from person dying to person dying and helping them along. It was interesting for the first one, but after that, it just got a bit tedious. And the book is guilty of doing one of those things that I hate with first issues, of saving everything interesting and everything leading to an ongoing plot for the last few pages. Nothing action-wise happens until right at the end. And then you have a couple of big, oh, wow, what just happened moments. So they hook you for the next issue.
Yeah, I feel like I see that, you know, it's the TV method of writing comics nowadays. And I don't love that. I don't love that, you know, we see this a lot in comic books, especially like crossovers or, you know, like intercompany crossovers. Like the entire first issue will focus on one, you know, one character, and you won't see the person they're crossing over with until the last page of the first issue. And I, you know, in the comic space, at $5 a pop and with 30 days in between issues, I feel like they have to compress that storytelling a bit. Unless you're going to give me just the most bang up comic I've ever read, you got to. I need you to get to the heart of the story by the middle of the first issue if you want me to come back for issue two.
Yep, and that's where I'm at with this one. Is there were some interesting things about it. I did enjoy some of it, but I didn't enjoy it enough to give it a second issue.
You know, it's been a while since we've talked about what a good first issue gives you. And I feel like if a first issue, the big thing, the big questions are things like, where are we? Or who's that guy? Those aren't mysteries enough to keep me on board.
Yeah.
I think a good first issue should be like the good pilot of a television show. It should, number one, blow you away. You should be from the jump. You know, you ought to have a great cold open, you know, an edge of your seat cold open, and it should just impress you all the way through. Don't save the good stuff for issue four. Hit me with good stuff from the jump. Don't promise me, oh, the good stuff's coming. Show me the good stuff now. And also promise better stuff on down the road. But if you're not giving me the good stuff in issue one, I got other places to spend my money. I got to tell you, as a lifelong comics fan, every new comic book day, I have the same conversation with myself. And that conversation is, maybe this is the time I get out a weekly comic. Maybe I just start buying, you know, graphic novels, you know, complete story arcs. Because I can't tell you how many abandoned issue ones I have in my collection, you know, yeah, where I'm just like, boy, this sucks. Or I stuck around on issue one and then didn't make it past issue three because they just there. It was always where's the cheese, right?
You know, yeah. Well, I will say, you know, we recently had. I mean, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, Aaron, but I do.
But you
say,
did.
We recently had. I did. Well, because I want to dispute your point.
No.
I should wait my time. This is a dispute team. Wait your time.
You can dispute my point in 31 minutes, Paul.
But I will say, on the flip side of that, we actually had some decent first issues recently, right? You know, between Absolute Green Arrow, Odin of the Earth. We're going to talk about one next week in Mask number one. Mm-hmm. And I feel like these are, you know, these are all four books, even though we had differing opinions on Of the Earth and Odin, and we promised we were going to reread them before issue two. I feel like all four of those books, and you enjoyed The Fury of Firestorm. I bought it, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
I feel like these are all situations recently where the first issue stuck the, it's not even the landing, it's the beginning, right?
Right.
Stuck the liftoff, maybe. And, you know, I feel like when that happens, it's, you know, we got lucky that so many of them have happened in recent weeks. But yeah, to your point, there's a lot of first. Like, I feel like this week was a week of first issues that did not work for me, whereas in recent weeks there have been some.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, Paul. If we've been lucky in the past, this was not our lucky week.
Yeah, this was not a lucky week, because that actually brings up, you know, we're going to talk about nothing but first issues this week, funny enough, because we're going to talk about Supergirl Survive, which is a new Elseworlds tale from DC Comics, where Supergirl is, you know, Kara Zor-El is, you know, sent with her brother, with her cousin Kal-El. Sorry, I saw He-Man this week, and He-Man and She-Ra, I've had them on the brain. But, you know, Kara Zor-El and Kal-El are in the rocket together, and they are knocked off course. They never make it to Earth, even though that's the intended, destination. They don't make it to Earth during the destruction of Krypton, and now Kara has to protect Kal-El, you know, through the dangers of space with her life. And, you know, I all three of us read it. It sounds like we have some interesting opinions on it, because, Aaron, you said you didn't even finish it.
No, I didn't. I could not stand what I was reading. I wanted to like this book. I thought that the preview images that I saw last week, I thought that the write-up that was shared, I thought was great. And I got into the reality of the book, and, you know, it's a CW drama. It is very much, you know, there was no Kryptonization of the setting while they're on Krypton. It felt very much like a regular old American high school, and, you know, as such that there are lockers, and they're talking about going to the formal, and, you know, it's just, hey,
the space formal.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
even more so, though, not just a regular American high school, a regular American high school from the 1970s.
Yeah. And I got super frustrated by it, that there was, and I understood what they were trying to do. Don't get me wrong. I get what they were trying to do, that this was a choice that the writer made let's not sci-fi this up. You know, let's make it very much an American high school. It's not what I'm interested in reading when I pick up an issue of Supergirl, an Elseworlds issue of Supergirl, where she is, when she leaves Krypton at an older age with, you know, Kal-El. I was so frustrated. And I made it halfway through, and I'm like, well, fuck this. And so I was out.
I read the whole book, and you missed some things near the end I think you probably would have disliked as well. My issues with the book. First thing started with the character of Kara. This is a Kara that seems to have anxiety disorder and is just unable to interact with people, has all these fears. I am perfectly fine with Kara struggling with mental things, but I prefer that to be because she's watched the destruction of her planet.
Right.
Not to start with a struggling Kara that is already in this place before any of that happened.
Right.
So that was my first issue. Second was, like you were saying, this does not look like an alien society. It looks like 1970s, you know, 1970, because I say 70s, because they're doing the nuclear drills that get under your desk and basically kiss yourself goodbye because it's not going to do any good when there's radiation. They are dealing so much here with trying to bring political issues onto Krypton. This is not a Krypton that is destroyed by natural means. It's a Krypton destroyed by nuclear war against each other and turning the planet green. And they just keep bringing in all of these seemingly modern political issues as well, of family members not talking to each other and because of political differences. While some politics on Krypton definitely has been interesting stories, that's never been on any of the Elseworlds stories I've read what leads to the destruction.
Yeah. I will tell you, that stuff didn't bother me as much as it bothered you guys. I got what the writer was going for, which was, you know, presenting Krypton as, you know, this you know, similar to Earth setting to make it more approachable. Where I actually had my biggest issues or my biggest gripes with this book is almost kind of like what you were just saying about Dutton Ranch, the first episode, Aaron, is I don't feel like they started the story in the right place. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're much like Dutton Ranch. You didn't need to tell the story chronologically. You should have started this first issue in media res and had Kara and Cal, you know, in a precarious situation, and then flashed back to a later issue to explore, you know, the day of Krypton's destruction that led them to that situation. Because as a first issue, you know, it's just like you were saying with Dead Man, Wayne, nothing really happened until the last third of this book. Other than that, it's basically just like, you know, Kara having a bad day at school. And so I feel like, you know, that's the story choice that was made here to tell the story chronologically ended up lessening the impact, because nothing really happens in the book until the last few pages of the book. And so that's not just, and from a comic book perspective, from a superhero comic book perspective specifically, that's not superhero comic book storytelling.
Yeah. Well, and I don't like how that first issue ends either. The rocket that they shoot them off on gets damaged by missiles being fired and crash lands on their moon. She's not somebody that can really fix a ship, but I'm guessing they're going to fix it and fly away, because she's watching the destruction of Krypton from its own glowing green moon instead of being rocketed away.
Yeah.
And the destruction isn't the planet blowing up, it's nuclear war, basically wiping out civilization.
Yeah.
I thought this book was a tremendously, tremendously unfortunate missed opportunity. You know, yeah. I love it.
It's such a great premise, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great premise. Tell us a story about a different type of origin with Supergirl and Superman. I don't recall having seen an Elseworlds story in that mode. That would have been fun. I was excited about this.
Yeah. And the story that we all wanted to see hasn't even started yet as of the last page of this book.
And again, that's the problem with a lot of first issues. And it was a problem with this one. Give me the awesome stuff in the first issue. Make it great. And then tell me about all the better stuff. Promise the better stuff coming. And this was, I only made it halfway through this stupid book. And there was nothing on those pages that I thought was. In fact, there's a page where Kara first meets her baby cousin, and she has this really weird comment to him, like, "I will protect you with my life." And I'm like, who says that when they're holding a baby? You know, when also, they get
the, she
when
literally get, just met the baby.
Yeah, right? I can understand. Oh my God, aren't you the sweetest thing? I love you already. I get that. I mean, it's how you deal with a puppy, right? But you never say, "I pledge you my life."
First time you meet the baby.
Yeah. Now, if they were introducing her to Crypto and she said, you know, "I will protect you with my life," I could accept that. But not a baby.
Only
a puppy.
I hate when an Elseworlds book fails to launch, because I'm such a fan of Elseworlds. I love how DC writes their alternative timelines, more so than Marvel does What If, because they spend time, you know, in that space, whereas Marvel just always kind of rushes through it in the What If space.
And you know what hurt this more, Aaron? That we had such a good Elseworlds last week?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not the worst book I read this week. Because holy shit, Wayne. I mean, I don't know about you. Because, I did not grow up with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You're a few years younger than I am. You know, so I literally just skirted the edge on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But my brother is big into it. So I was like, but, you know, you've got a cover by Jim Chung, one of my favorite comic book artists ever. And, you know, it's a reboot-ish. It's basically a continuation of the original series set 10 years after the original series. I don't know if it wiped out any prior Boom Studios continuity or what, but I was like, I'll give it a shot. They say it's new reader friendly. Like, I've always liked the concept of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and Kaiju and stuff like that. Like, it's this type of stuff I grew up on, Voltron and Ultraman and all those things. So, like, I like the idea of it. But not only was this book terrible, the drawing in it felt like I was reading, you know, something that I bought in Artist Alley at a convention that someone self-published. Like, it's the night, other than, I mean, I think the Zords were drawn well, but the humans were drawn so poorly in this book, like with weird, like, faces and body, you know, like the bodies don't quite look like normal human bodies. I really did not care for this book in almost any capacity past the cover.
Yeah. What are the worst?
Did you like it?
One of the worst art things is, there is a page where Trini is introducing the team to her daughter, and I spent probably 2-3 minutes trying to figure out why it looked like she had a goatee.
Before why does she have a skull patch? It's her daughter's hair.
Like, why would you do daughter's that? Hair. No, let me send you through my thought process this week, Paul. Mm-hmm. My initial thought was that I haven't enjoyed the comics lately for Power Rangers. So it's like, okay, I'm not going to jump in on this new series at all. And then I see your message. Hey, wait, I picked this up for you. And I'm like, well, hell, I'm going to have to read this now. So I bought the book to read it with you because you were buying it to read with me, Paul. And this is the blandest. I mean, the concepts in it aren't terrible concepts. I have seen these concepts done with better storytelling, better art.
Yeah, it was so weird, right?
But it was so bland. Like, the art had nothing to it. It was nothing.
The art had nothing to it. The story had nothing to it. It's basically like, hey, 10 years later, we know you live your life, hop in a suit and get in a Zord. And that's like the story. Like, there's no, like, conflict. There's no character. You
the
know,
characters had dynamics. Zero personality whatsoever throughout the entire book. They were basically, they could have been interchanged with absolutely anyone. There is no explanation at all for why their costumes now look different.
Yeah.
The only thing that I thought was interesting was them realizing they were rusty when they were controlling the Zords.
Yeah, but I mean,
but that
the art didn't portray that for what it's worth. You know, like, hey, we're rusty. Okay, in what way? Because, like, I'm not really getting anything in here that says that you're doing something wrong. So it's such an, and I hate to use this
when
word
will creators realize that an interesting villain is not vines or goo or something that doesn't talk to you and is, you know, an environment. You do not start your book or your movie or your TV show with an environment threat.
Yeah.
You give somebody you can talk to, so it helps you bring the characters out.
Yeah. So I'm hard out on this book. Like, it was just such a misstep of a first issue. It's not like I only read bad books this week. I do want to clarify, we're not going to talk about Batman issue 10, but I enjoyed it. But same. I don't have anything new to say about it other than that I hadn't said about the first 9 issues of the book. So that's
I didn't get to my Batman this week, so I only read terrible books this week.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, Wayne.
Well, maybe next week will be better for you, Wayne.
I am hoping the other books I haven't read yet will be better.
Yeah.
Speaking of next week, hey Paul.
Yes, sir.
Out next week.
Well, speaking of next week and issue 1, there's a couple of things that I want to draw to your attention, gentlemen. One, Tarzan Beyond issue 1. Comes out next week from Alien Books. It's that new publishing company. And it's written by Steve Orlando with art by Renato Guedes. It's I'm very, very interested in this. So, you know, the years have been kind to the Lord of the Jungle and his faithful companion, Jane. They've grown older, wiser, and carved out a peaceful existence after decades of adventuring. But not all good things are meant to last, and their world becomes threatened when the nefarious Blackbeard the Pirate and his crew lay siege to Tarzan's homeland in search of the secrets of immortality.
So is this like Greybeard Tarzan?
Not on the cover, but that doesn't mean anything. He might be inside. I
don't know
seen
that I want to see old man Tarzan in a loincloth.
Well, I mean, it might be the movie, like the Christopher Lambert movie, right? Greystoke, Legends of Tarzan. I'm curious. I'm going to give it a shot. You know, I'm very curious about that one. But that's not the only thing that I want to call out next week in issue ones. We also have Mask issue number one. I referenced that earlier. Mobile Armored Strike Command. From Skybound. This is the next book in the Energon universe. It is an oversized issue one. We received a preview copy of it. I don't think we can say much about it other than it comes out next week, and I look forward to discussing it with you guys. So definitely check it out. That's all I can say. Also, in number ones, Avengers Armageddon issue one comes out next week from Chip Zdarsky. Is the writer, and the artist looks like it's by Delio Diaz. And I bring it up because it was announced this week that coming out of this, so this is, I think Red Hulk is kind of like on a, you know, has gone crazy. He's on a power mad trip. He's taken over Latveria, and so Earth's Mightiest Heroes have to stop him. And so this Avengers Armageddon is leading into a relaunch of the Avengers book with Chip Zdarsky on writing and Marco Cecchetto on art. Big fan of Marco Cecchetto, featuring an all-new Avengers team that will feature Wolverine, Luke Cage, Daredevil, Captain Marvel, and Spider-Man. And it's, instead of Earth's Mightiest Heroes, it's Earth's Mightiest Survivors. So I'm very curious about Avengers Armageddon and what it could be setting up, because so I'm going to give issue one a shot, because, and if it sucks, then I know I'm also out on the new Avengers book.
And who's writing that?
Chip Zdarsky.
I like
Chip Zdarsky. So yeah. I'm going to give it a shot.
I will have a look at the preview pages.
Yeah.
That's what I'll do. That's my level of commitment, Paul. I'll look at the preview page.
A couple of other books to call out for next week. Absolute Catwoman number one. I know you guys aren't reading Absolute Batman.
I actually am. I picked up the first two volumes of Absolute Batman, and I gotta say I like it.
Well, Absolute Catwoman issue one comes out next week. Maybe we're checking out. Jay and Silent Bob, Jay's A Future Past.
Oh, no, thank you.
Comes out next week from writer Kevin Smith, artist Giuseppe Camuncoli. This is something that actually was talked about when Stan Lee was making the movie Mallrats with Kevin Smith, or cameoing in the movie Mallrats. They actually talked about this comic, and it just never came to fruition until now, where Jay and Silent Bob interact with the Marvel Universe. There's new issues of the Barbara Gordon breakout book featuring a story that was set up in the recent issues of Batman.
I really am enjoying the Barbara Gordon storyline. It's
me too.
Very enjoyable.
Me too. There's, of course, also the next issue of Transformers.
Trust the plan,
Optimus' new Autobot. Trust the plan. In Transformers issue 33, Optimus' new Autobot team is revealed. Looking forward to checking that out. But there's one more book I want to call out, gentlemen. One more book from Mad Cave Studios, Flash Gordon issue 17. And you may be thinking, why do we care? Why do we care about Flash Gordon issue 17? We haven't talked about the last 16 issues of Flash Gordon because the first issue wasn't particularly great. However, the main reason I want to talk about it is that I didn't realize that back in April, Dan Abnett took over writing Flash Gordon. And so he is the writer on this book as of Flash Gordon issue 0, which came out in April. So I'm very curious.
And the preview pages look amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look great.
I am definitely interested in this book. So I've already picked up issue 0. It's on Comixology. It's not free. Yeah, I had to pay for it, but I'm definitely curious about it. Yes, I had to pay.
I'll check out issue 0. All right.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it next week.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Tell us about a first issue you feel like got it right. We'd love to hear about that. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness Serper.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
All right. Well, maybe next week you'll be on time, Paul.
I don't know. I mean, I will be. Andrew, probably not, but I will be.
We don't really expect that sort of thing from Andrew, but we expect better from you, Paul.
Fair point.
I mean, and largely because you do all the work. I mean, you know.
We did not start this podcast until I came on.
We didn't take a note. We did nothing. Nothing.
Catch you next week, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.